Before we start today's show, we want to share some exciting news from the Radiotopia family. Normal Gossip is back for its sixth season. If you've ever found yourself eavesdropping on strangers' juicy conversations and maybe wanting to chime in too, this show is for you. On Normal Gossip, host Kelsey McKinney shares the juiciest gossip sent in by listeners all around the world, then brings in a special guest to weigh in on the actions within the story. The stories are everything from petty to bizarre to downright strange. Fun fact, you might recognize a few of this season's guests from the Radiotopia universe. So check it out. New episodes start April 17th. Listen to Normal Gossip wherever you get your podcasts. Radio Diaries is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Radiotopia. From PRX.
From PRX's Radiotopia, this is Radio Diaries. Whoa! Here's a little song for everybody out there. What do Elton John, Celine Dion, Garth Brooks, Ice-T, and Kiss have in common? They were all reportedly invited to perform at the presidential inauguration of Donald Trump and declined. And then there was British singer and X Factor winner Rebecca Ferguson. She said she would consider performing at the inauguration if she were allowed to sing the song Strange Fruit. Her statement called it, quote, a song that has huge historical importance, a song that was blacklisted in the United States for being too controversial, a song that speaks to all the disregarded and downtrodden black people in the United States, end quote. It's also a song we know very well here at Radio Diaries. And today we're going back to an old episode of the podcast to tell you the story behind Strange Fruit. In August of 1930, a photographer took a picture of two black teenagers hanging by their necks from a tree in the town square of Marion, Indiana. The picture shows the crowd gathered around, pointing at the bodies, some smiling. Today, it's probably the most iconic photograph of lynching in America. After seeing that photograph, a high school teacher in the Bronx named Abel Mirapol wrote a poem, which he set to music. That song, Strange Fruit, was later made famous by Billie Holiday.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root.
So that's the story behind the song, Strange Fruit. But there's another story behind that story, a story many people don't know. You can't see it in the photograph. You don't hear it in the song. There was a third black boy who was almost lynched that day. He had a noose put around his neck, but his life was spared. James Cameron is believed to be the only African-American to survive a lynching, and this is his story. But this is also the story of the white residents of Marion, Indiana, who witnessed or took part in the events of that day. In the 1970s, some of their memories were recorded on cassette tapes, put in a box, and forgotten for decades. Those cassettes were found in a basement a few years back, and you'll hear them throughout this story. And one final note, as you can imagine, this story contains some disturbing and graphic descriptions of the lynching. This is Strange Fruit.
It was night of August the 7th, 1930, and it was after dark, and I knew something's going to happen.
It was a smothery day in summer when you just couldn't get your breath hardly, and all over town you felt like something was wrong.
We heard about the shooting and the sort of dangerous condition of the mob gathering down there, you know.
There had never been anything like this. It come unexpected to the whole town. We didn't think anything would develop up here because those things just don't happen up north. You know, you get mixed up in a feeling. You couldn't control it.
My name is Jim Madison. I'm a historian at Indiana University. I'm the author of A Lynching in the Heartland, Race and Memory in America. On the night of August the 6th of 1930, Claude Dieter, who was age 24, a local factory worker in Marion, Indiana, was shot. We know that three young black men were at the scene of the crime. We know that there was also a young white woman who was at the scene of the crime. Who pulled the trigger, who shot Claude Dieter, is not known, and I don't think really can be known.
The sheriff, Jake Campbell, he had been looking for the three colored boys, and they went out to the home of Ship, Smith, and Cameron.
Tom Ship, who was 19, Abe Smith, who was 18, James Cameron, who was 16. James Cameron especially was very slight in stature. He looked like he was 12 or 13, not even 16.
My name was James Cameron. I can never forget that night. When they put me in this jail, I was in there about 3 hours when daylight approached. And they were gathering in small knots of people, 8 to 10 people at a time, and shaking fists up at the jail, and the crowds kept getting bigger and bigger all during the day.
I came down from the office, and Grendel said, "Where are you going, kiddo?" And I said, "Well, I'm going home." I said, "I finished my day's work." And he said, "Well, you better stick around." And I said, "Well, what's going on?" I said, "I haven't heard anything." And he said, "Well, they're going to lynch the niggers." And I said, "Oh, Grendel, you're kidding." And he said, "No, I'm not." He said, "You better stick around," said, "there's going to be some excitement." So we went down to Marion and drove in on the square just for curiosity.
People from all over town, from all over the county, get in their cars and drive to the courthouse square. Hundreds of cars blocking the streets, parked at all kinds of crazy angles like spilled matchsticks. There were some estimates by newspaper reporters that as many as 10,000 people were at the scene in this little Indiana town by early evening as the sun was setting.
It was something like 7 or 7:30, and it just seemed like things were just normal. And then all at once, why, things just broke loose and started to happen.
Claude Dieter died in the Marion Hospital. And as news of his death spread, people became more and more incensed. The police removed Dieter's bloody shirt and hung it from the front window of the police station.
The white man who had been shot, his bloody shirt was hanging on the flagpole of police headquarters there in Marion, Indiana, for the whole city to see, waving a red flag in front of a bull. That's what you might call it.
And this mob, a lot of them were good citizens. But they'd been whipped up to an edge where they were ready for anything. And they got that rope out of one of the hardware stores here. The rope that they used was new rope. It was about 3/8 inch. I used to have a piece of it. And this mob started for the jail, and as it went, it got bigger all the way.
Benjamin Franklin said that a lynch mob is a beast of many hands and no brains. But there were brains in this lynch mob standing in front of that jail. Leaders who knew what they were doing.
That jail wall was that thick, and they had sledges and crowbars.
And the sheriff, Jake Campbell, they started pounding on the doors, and old Jake wouldn't open up. He would not do it.
The sheriff had plenty of police officers there to stop the action of the mob, but the sheriff gave orders not to shoot out into the crowd because there were women and children out there. So when the mob heard that, some big men, 4 or 5 of them, asked for a sledgehammer, and they began to pound around the front door of the jail, which was ironclad. And finally, they busted a hole in this iron door, and then the jail was theirs. They took Tommy out of his jail cell block. They beat Tommy first.
And they come dragging one of the boys out of the jail. They took him right down the sidewalk. Everybody was kicking, hitting him, and everything else.
We knew that Tommy was dead when they drug him out of sight because someone had ran a crowbar through him several times. And then they drug him through the streets like a dead horse.
people beating on him with anything they had in their hand and screaming and carrying. It was just out of this world. It was terrible. And the thing that hit me the hardest was that there was so many women involved in it.
The mob then returned to the jail and pulled out Abe Smith, 18 years old, carrying him the block and a half from the Grant County Jail to a maple tree on the courthouse square. He was alive all the way, and there, with another noose, they threw over the limb of that tree and pulled the body up.
And he reached up to get hold of the rope to keep from choking him. So they let him down and broke his arms so he couldn't hang on to the rope. And they pulled him up again.
The town photographer, Beitler, set up his cumbersome equipment, his big powder flash, and took a photograph of the bodies and of the crowd. Someone wrote at the time that it looked just like people gathering at a county fair. Men and women, old and young, a couple holding hands, a pregnant woman, a man in working clothes, a man with a coat and tie. Ordinary, average Americans attracted to the spectacle of lynching.
So after 15 or 20 minutes of having their pictures taken and everything, they came back to get me. And just then the sheriff came in, and he was sweating like somebody had thrown a bucket of water in his face. He told the mob leader, said, get the hell out of here. So you've already hung two of them, so that ought to satisfy you. And then they began to yell for me like a favorite basketball or football player. They said, we want Cameron, we want Cameron, we want Cameron. And I looked over into the faces of people as they were beating me along the way up to the tree. I was pleading for some kind of mercy, looking for a kind face, but I could find none. They got me up to the tree, and they got a rope, and they put it around my neck, and they began to push me under the tree. And that's when I prayed to God. I said, Lord, have mercy and forgive me my sins. I was ready to die.
This is the point where we don't know exactly what happened. Some people say that a man stood up on the top of a car roof and shouted out, he's innocent, he didn't do it. Whatever was said, whoever said it, whatever the cause, the mob decided at the last minute not to lynch James Cameron. I suspect that Cameron was spared because he had the good luck of being the third, not the first or second, because he looked so young. Whatever the causes, James Cameron was taken back to the jail, and his life was spared.
Why, after it happened, I'd wished a thousand times I hadn't been so inquisitive. And then, you know, both those trees died after that.
And so at the end of the day, the town photographer, he took the photograph, went back to his studio, and stayed up through the night making copies, which were sold on the courthouse square in Marion, Indiana the next morning at 50 cents apiece, souvenir postcards of that Marion lynching.
I have one of the original pictures, and in that picture, I can pick out Big Steve, who run the Marion Flyer. I could pick out Harry Lennon, who was a brother-in-law later on of Carl Barney, who beat me for mayor. I can pick out Happy Ansel. I can pick out Happy Ansel's mother-in-law. I can pick out...
That's what makes that photograph the most famous lynching picture. If you cover the people up, you just got a lynching of two blacks hanging on the tree. But when you remove your hand and you see the expressions on their faces, that's what adds the importance to the picture, because of the people in it.
And that photograph was one of the instigators of Mirpol writing this wonderful, wonderful song called Strange Fruit, made all the more wonderful because Billie Holiday sang it.
Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging poplar trees.
James Cameron was eventually convicted and served 4 years in jail. Much, much later on, the governor of Indiana in 1993 issued an official pardon for James Cameron.
When a traumatic event happens like that, it makes an indelible imprint on the mind. But I told them, since Indiana had forgiven me, I in turn forgive Indiana.
Here is a strange and bitter crop.
James Cameron died in 2006 at the age of 92. There's one final footnote to the story behind the story of the song Strange Fruit. More than a decade after Abel Mirapol wrote the song, he became intimately connected to another famous execution. In 1953, Mirapol and his wife adopted two young boys named Robert and Michael Rosenberg. They were the children of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, who had been accused of being spies and had been executed a few months earlier by the U.S. government. Thanks today to James Madison, author of A Lynching in the Heartland, also Virgil Cameron, son of the late James Cameron, the Indiana and Purdue University Archive, Wisconsin Public Television, and WHYY's Fresh Air for the use of their 1994 interview with James Cameron. This story was produced by Anyansi Diaz-Cortez and myself. The Radio Diaries podcast is produced by Nellie Gillis and Sarah Kate Kramer. Thanks to our editors Deborah George and Ben Shapiro. We have support from the National Endowment for the Humanities, National Endowment for the Arts, and listeners like you. Radio Diaries is part of Radiotopia from PRX, a curated network of 16 extraordinary shows. Radiotopia is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp. I'm Joe Richman of Radio Diaries. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia.